We're doing the Chafetz Chaim, and perhaps we are up to the most important paragraph in the whole book. Everything here is important, but this paragraph is one which people err in, and sometimes the harmful effects of making a mistake in this paragraph that we're about to learn can destroy someone's life. The Chafetz Chaim says something that we tend to overlook. Says the Chafetz Chaim, "V'lifamim shayach isul lashon hara afilu al katan." The Chafetz Chaim says sometimes the prohibition of lashon hara is relevant even with regards to a minor. Kigon mesaper gnuto shel yatom katan. For example, if a person recounts something derogatory, something shameful about a young orphan, shem gadlim oto acherim betoch beitam, that has housing from someone else, someone is raising this orphan in their home, and then a person comes in and says, you know, I heard, and then he starts speaking badly about that kid. Could happen that because of what he says, they'll kick him out. And any way that's similar to this, whereby if a person says lashon hara, he could harm a minor, or to pain him by the lashon hara. So again, it falls under the heading of lashon hara. Why is this so important? The Chafetz Chaim in the footnote writes, he gives the example of an orphan because he can't imagine an example of a child who's not an orphan where this would be relevant. So I want to discuss where it is very relevant with children who are not orphans. And this begins in staff meetings of schools. A staff member can say, you know, this kid is a serious troublemaker. And then the whole staff views him that way. But what's worse is that sometimes parents unwittingly destroy their child's prospects in a school. And the way it works is like this. Parents assume that when they deal with teachers and principals and therapists and counselors in school, they're dealing with professionals. Hopefully they're right. Parents assume that if they share in confidentiality with a teacher or a principal or a counselor or a therapist, that their child has an issue. Their child is hyper, their child is misbehaving, their child has been diagnosed with something. Parents assume that that information will be treated delicately. And unfortunately, we've seen many times where that information was not only mishandled, that information was given out without discrimination. And that information served to destroy the child's prospects of succeeding at the school. So parents are faced with a double-edged sword. A parent that has a child with diabetes, if they don't tell the school, the child could die. You know, if the child suddenly has an attack, they need to be treated. Parents that have a child that needs to take Ritalin, very often if you work with the school, things will work much better for the child. But before you go and work with the school, and usually it's very important to work with the school, but before you go and work with the school, you have to work off of an assumption that people are not careful with this halacha. That people speak and they don't realize that they can destroy a child's future. And many a parent has shared with a teacher that they've been taking their child to therapy, or that their child has been having a rough time at home, or all kinds of difficulties their child had, which were not really relevant to the school. And then the teacher went and blabbed it at a staff meeting, and suddenly all the teachers knew it, and suddenly the child got a label of being a problematic child and could never shake that label. And that's why as parents, although we have a responsibility to work with the system, and in order to work with the system, very often we will have to share with the system things that are pertinent to the system. But we also have to think things through. And we have to realize that this is a halacha that is most commonly overlooked. People feel like, hey, we're all educators, so of course we can talk. And that's not true. I used to volunteer in an organization for children who were abused. It was an orphanage, but the parents were very much alive, just they were not allowed to raise their own children. And there was a woman there, Mrs. Fetter, who headed the home, And she once told me that whenever they're about to accept a child into the home, so they have a meeting, and all the therapists sit at this meeting, and they have all the different professionals, and then they tell them, this is the child we want to send you, and they bring in this huge loose leaf with files and files about the child. And everyone goes through the loose leaf, leafs through it, and when it comes to her, she just passes it on. So when she first came, they asked her, why don't you go through the loose leaf? And she said, my job is to be a mother to these children. And what goes on in the loose leaf is every therapist that meets the child has to add something. That's what they're being paid for. So they've got to find something problematic to write about the child. That's what they're being paid for. So every therapist every year is going to add something to this loose leaf. Why don't I learn the child, work with the child, and see how I could help the child, and let the child have a fresh start when he comes to our home. So very often in school, that's also so. It's very often in the child's best interest that teachers do not talk, that the sixth grade teacher does not tell the seventh grade teacher who was the problematic child in his class, so that the child has a fresh start and the ability to succeed. What happens if a child walks into the classroom and the teacher already knows he was the troublemaker last year? And this year the child decides he's going to be a good kid, he's going to participate, and so the teacher starts teaching. And then the child thinks he has a very smart comment to add to the class, so he raises his hand. So the teacher automatically looks at him, and his alert signs go up. Now he's going to challenge me. This is the problematic kid. I was warned about him. It's the first day of class, and already he's trying to make trouble. And when he's going to allow the child to speak, he's already going to approach anything the child says with the vantage point that he was told to have. And that's why this halacha is so important. It's important as educators. It's important as parents. We have to be very careful with the lashon hara about minors, and minors have feelings. People will very often tell stories about kids, and they assume that it's okay, he's a child. But if he feels bad when you tell the story, then you're not allowed to tell the story.
Even if he doesn't hear, you mean?
Yeah. Child, the prohibition of lashon hara is about a child as well. It says, parents, we share with one another what's relevant, because we have to educate a kid. So we work together, but when we talk to other people, so there are many things we should not tell other people because our children wouldn't want us to. So the laws of lashon hara apply also. And if everyone knows it about this minor, so then we've discussed different rules about that in previous chapters. And let's say a person feels like he has to tell this about the child to prevent damage. I had a student once who was a shoplifter. So can you watch him go into a store and ignore the fact that the kid has a history of shoplifting? Can you just turn a blind eye? Or are you responsible when you see it to prevent others from harm? I had a friend who wanted to hire this kid who was in my class and was caught shoplifting numerous times. And I said, he's a sweet kid, he's a nice kid, and I don't think you could put him behind the cash register. And the person understood. I said, this is what I know. Here's the person who called me and told me the kid was shoplifting in his store. Why don't you get the story from him and see if you can give him a job? So just because he's a minor doesn't mean I'm not going to tell other people. If you want to prevent others from harm, or sometimes you need to tell someone in order to help educate the child, so then it's mutar. Sometimes you need other people to deal with the child. But what you have to know is first that the story is true. Don't be quick to assume if you heard it from other people that it's true. That's also halach in lashon hara. Kmo shiva lekaman, we're going to see the details of that later on. Gam tzirich lirot tanolad al yedei sipuro. A person also has to have the foresight to see what will evolve from his telling over the story. As the example I gave in the beginning, because very often the people who hear what you say will misapply it and will judge the child unfairly, and the child will suffer unfairly. So the responsibility before we speak is also to think through what's really going on with this kid and what's really going to happen if I tell it. Is it permissible? Do I know the information to be factual? Is it necessary? What will come of it? There are many angles to analyze, and then sometimes it might be permissible But the very important point that we have to realize is that it's not obviously permissible. It's just like talking about an adult. We have to verify, we have to really verify what's going on. All the details as though it were an adult. Now, if your 2-year-old did something funny and your 3-year-old did something funny, I don't think Lashon Hara is relevant there. There are young ages where what the child does is cute and the child isn't embarrassed by it and he does it in front of everyone. I don't think that's what we're talking about here. Here we're talking about a child who's old enough to be embarrassed, old enough to be hurt by what's said. We're talking about children where it's relevant. Yes?
It's a strong recommendation, because it sounds like a really, with adults in and of itself, I think Lashon Hara can be a pretty fine line to walk. Sometimes as a part, when you want to warn somebody of something, as you know, which could be, you know, a real problem, as opposed to Lashon Hara, sounds like this line is drawn even thinner when it comes to. Or this balance to walk, this line to walk is, or I don't know if it's to walk, but it's even thinner when it comes to minors, I would take it then. So would it be a strong recommendation towards having a like you said about the sixth grader and then the seventh grader. So the idea is to have more of an open, I guess, sort of an open mind to the idea of, well, this kid might have changed over time, so I'm going to let it go, I guess.
Usually the assumption is, you have to really think through the last point Chav Chaim said. Let's say you're the 6th grade teacher.
Uh-huh.
Are you sure you have to say anything to the 7th grade teacher? Why not let him discover on his own? Why is it so important to tell him? Huh. Saying that's, what would happen if you didn't say anything? What harm would happen? By not saying, usually you allow the child to have another chance. Usually, saying that.
Seems the 2 points that you made there, that first, be sure it's true. And then, if it's necessary. Many times something's true, but it's not necessary. So